Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
It is 3 p.m. on Thursday, and that means it's time to meet your maker. This is the show where you get to do exactly that. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton. My guests today are here special at Roberta's from the Midwest. They are two sisters, Megan and Trisha, 7 years apart, who work together on Chefs Not Allowed, which is both a blog and a podcast. They have their very own. And it's loosely based around the ingredient challenge, where they each take an ingredient and work on ponder it over a month, and then at the end, there's kind of a loose competition for who's perfected the best recipe, which doesn't always happen. But the catch is that one of them lives in Chicago and one of them lives in Columbus, Ohio. And so they aren't together when they're doing all these things. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
So I heard this all started with horseradish root. Is that right? So do you want to tell us the story of how this actually came to be?
Sure. I was just in my grocery store, and I happened upon this horseradish root and picked it up and thought to myself, what the heck should I do with this? I'm going to buy it. I'm going to do something with it. So I took it home, and I looked at it for a little while, and then I happened to call my sister, who I knew would embark upon a challenge with me, and said, hey, go get yourself a horseradish root, and I dare you to beat me on a recipe with it. And she said, you're on.
Right. I mean, it was immediate. I'm like, I'm there. I'm doing it. But then, of course, since it was a horseradish root and I've never actually seen it in my grocery store or looked for it,
where did you find one?
Well, I went to Whole Foods, but my first thought was,
that's because they're a sponsor of the show.
So that all works out. But I remember saying to Megan, you might have to mail me one. Yeah. Like thinking, like, I don't know where I'm going to go. And in Columbus, Ohio, I might not find one. But I did find it. And it was totally fun to just dive into a new ingredient. And then also, I have, at the time, I had a little baby. And so the thought of actually having someone over to visit us was sounded so nice. I'm like, I'm going to do this.
Because I'm having a dinner party. So yeah, that was the second part of it. So I dare you, you know, I'll challenge you to do something with this.
In your mind, what were you thinking you would do with it?
I didn't know. I thought I'd start with just prepared horseradish. Uh-huh. Which is what I did. Uh-huh. I started with that. First, I started by putting it just in a food processor and smelling it. And then, like, practically every nose hair in my nose, right, like, disappeared instantly. So I did that, and then I moved on from there. But, yeah, part of it was then, you know, take a month, work with it, and then invite some friends over for a dinner party, and let's let them judge our dishes.
You could almost use that horseradish root for the entire month. Did you have to go back for seconds, or did
yes.
you make? Yeah, you could make that last for a long time.
No, yeah, I didn't. I had some left over, because I ended up making mustard. So, you know, as competitions go, especially among sisters, definitely, I decided who I was going to invite over, and then I made horseradish mustard from scratch and delivered it with homemade pretzels to his door to invite him to come to my dinner party. So I started early with trying to get my scores up, but unfortunately, Trisha kind of
To go with the punch when they walked in the door was a horseradish stuffed olive martini.
Yeah.
So I was like,
which was totally not fair.
Just, yeah, prime them up. So if the rest of my meal was horrible, I still might.
It didn't matter. They were drunk from the
right. Exactly.
But wait, earlier you were saying you tried to never have a drink when you were doing the show. So you pretty much, like, you cheated and blew the first rule, like, right out of the gate.
Well, we actually weren't doing the show then. So, so I was safe from that rule. That rule didn't come along until the radio show came along. And that was like a year later. So
your show was pre-recorded too, right?
No, we were live.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
that's
we were live.
So amazing. They're in different cities, and I'm just. So you said you did it. Did you just, like, set up your computers next to your stove?
We did, and
it could have been video. I guess I don't know how you would sync this.
It was funny because you've got your laptop on the kitchen counter, mm-hmm. and you've got headphones attached to your laptop, so you can really only move right. as far as the cord will let you go, mm-hmm. and so you had to have your kitchen set up so that if you needed a knife.
Right,
it had to better be
right
there, or else
you said you were using Skype, right? And
yeah.
how many people could you invite into a Skype video session.
Do Google Hangouts.
You know, I mean, because I think it's a limited number of people.
Then
right,
you can wear a party hat.
Have. Well, it was like three. We were Skyped in, but the radio station was actually in Detroit. So that's even funnier. So Megan's cooking in Chicago. I'm cooking in Columbus, Ohio. And our producer was in Detroit. And so all our callers who called in, our guests or people with questions, would call into the station in Detroit. So we didn't have to man that part of it.
In. Yeah.
And then she'd patch them in.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But wow, it was funny. Like, we did Whole Fish on one show, and I found, like, 7 minutes into it, I kind of cleaned my fish, but I couldn't get to the sink until there was a break. So I just had to stand there because my hands were covered in, like, fish slime.
Fish.
Yeah. So I got smarter, efficient, more efficient. As the show went on.
I have a question. I earlier said you were 7 years apart, but is that, or do you, are the, or were you one of seven children? Did I get that wrong?
No, five kids, but I'm number two and she's number five.
Yeah, and we're 7 years and 2 days apart, so our birthdays are right close together.
So are you the only, does everyone cook? Or were you the two that really took to it more than anyone else? Does anyone else, like, want in on the ingredient challenge?
I don't think anyone else wants in. I think I would say, no, our oldest sister doesn't cook at all because her husband does all the cooking. He actually gets a little more into it with us than she does. No, I would say that we're definitely the adventurers in the kitchen because our mom cooked because there were seven people in the family. She had to cook. But it's, being the youngest, like, people just kept moving out, and so there were just more leftovers. Like, she didn't know how to cook for less than seven.
Yeah.
And then when I moved out, she just stopped cooking altogether. So there wasn't joy in her cooking. It was more like, well, I'm the mom.
Necessity.
Yeah. So, and she did a great job.
But there's joy. I mean, obviously, that's why, what kind of drove you to keep doing, I mean, that's why you picked up the phone and called your sister in the first place with this challenge. Because to you guys, it's important and fun.
It's totally fun. I mean, we both have full-time jobs and kids at home, and we do this because we love it. And it, you know, it's our creative outlet. The whole thing of No Chefs Allowed is about curiosity. So it's that new ingredient every month and figuring out what the heck to do with it,
right,
and trying it 17 different ways.
And meeting new people that know more about it than you do. I mean, it's a great way to start a conversation, to bring them on the show and to learn something that you might not even think to ask them, you know, if you're at a grocery store being faced with this.
Have you ever had your neighbor on the show? Like, anyone on your block that's a good chef that,
you know what's funny?
Or not a chef.
Megan, I mean, that's what I mean. I mean, not a chef.
Not a chef. Megan was on vacation in one time when we were doing the show, and so I had a tea maker in my neighborhood. He has a tea shop down the street, be on the show. And he said to me, well, can I just come to your house? And I didn't know what to do with that because everything had been remote. You know, I wasn't, like, cooking in front of somebody or at the end. You know, it was always a goal to have, we'd cook on the show and you'd kind of be done at the end and you'd taste it and tell everybody how it went. But so he was just sitting right there. So it was funny. That was the only show where somebody came to my house and, like, hung out. And
how did that one go? It seems like that'd be kind of fun.
It was really fun. And it actually was great to have someone in because, like, at the
you.
Break, he
I
was
think she's
like,
saying the show's better without me.
No.
I think that's what she said.
No. No, no, no. I'm not saying that at all. But it was nice that, like, because you're doing the show and you're kind of like, when you're learning something new in the kitchen or anything, like producing a radio show, you're not exactly sure how you're doing. So
right.
Him sitting there at the end, he was like, wow, that was some multitasking. And he was like, thank you very much. Here, have a...
What did you make?
Tea poached halibut. It was really good.
That's not the whole fish. That's a different fish dish?
That was a different... Yeah.
So how do you... do you still aim to top each other? Is it just kind of fooling around at this point?
It's just kind of natural for me to top her, so... That's really how it goes most of the time.
Oh, that's so terrible.
I'm just kidding.
So where
are you? So are you? Where are you getting inspiration for what you're going to make? In other words,
from the ingredient, really, mm-hmm. really. I mean, and I have a tendency to, you know, frankly, hop on Google, but uh-huh. I will go to page 8, type in an ingredient, and go to page 8 and look for every random blogger on the planet who's uh-huh. thrown a recipe up there.
That's pretty
because that's where it gets fun,
right?
Not only are the recipes fun, but they'll answer you if you have a question.
Right.
You just type in, you know, I don't have this ingredient. Got any other ideas? And 10 minutes later, they're so into it that you've engaged in their recipe. They send you a message back. So I've actually met some pretty cool bloggers just through,
asking
you know,
them
doing
questions
that.
About
yeah.
their recipes. And then do you move beyond that and try and do your own twist on them as well?
Yeah, I think you always have to do uh-huh. your own twist yes. on it. You know, I mean, no recipe kind of turns out exactly the way you wanted it. But I will say, just a few weeks ago, we did chili, and
That was with our special friend, Matt Timms,
yes.
right? He's been on here multiple times.
I happened to pick up a frozen rabbit.
Yeah.
At the grocery store. Random. I mean, like...
They're like frozen solid.
Look, it's
right?
like the horseradish root. It was like, I saw it, I bought it, I brought it home, and we decided to do chili, and I thought, well, perfect. I'll make rabbit chili. Certainly everybody's done that, right? That's natural. It isn't. It is not. There are no rabbit chili recipes.
They're not very... They don't have very much fat, do they?
No. And they frankly don't have that much flavor, but... Right. But what perfect meat for a chili? Add right. some stuff to it. So all I could find was roadkill chili, which I just couldn't go there because that wasn't just for rabbit. It was for possum and squirrels and, you know.
Yeah.
So that was a case where I ended up having to kind of make it up.
Uh-huh. So what did you do?
Well, I started with an Italian cookbook because I knew they made a lot of rabbit stuff. And I went there and I found a rabbit dish that had some of the things I would typically put in chili, like, you know, red and yellow peppers and tomatoes. So I took those ingredients and then I just started adding chili powder to it. And then luckily it's radio and I'm the only one who tasted it.
And that probably didn't taste bad.
No, it actually tasted pretty good. I tried to pawn it off as chicken to my kids, which didn't work, but
the good thing about No Chefs Allowed, too, is that she had posted it on our Facebook page, and then some rabbit farmer came on and gave us some tips on it. So I think one of the great things about No Chefs Allowed is that we are learners right with everybody else who happens to follow it or listen on, because we're learning a new ingredient at the same time. So it's kind of a community event to learn about rabbit.
How did the rabbit farmer, was that a rabbit farmer or a frequent listener, or is that just random?
He was a friend of a friend. I trailed it back.
Have you visited
It was a rabbit trail.
No.
Rabbit trail. You gotta go. That'd be a remote show.
I just didn't get great response on the rabbit at home, so I don't know. But I hear it's a trend.
It is.
That was actually one of the things I wanted to ask you about was how you, like since you've been here in Brooklyn all of a couple of hours,
yeah.
Like how you feel your two, or maybe just compare the two. How is the Columbus food scene different than Chicago's? Are you working in kind of the same zone, or is one more different? Is one more farm centric than the other, or more fancy restaurant than the other?
I would have to say I think I would say that Columbus is more farm oriented because you don't have to drive as far to get to one.
Right.
I mean,
would you be considered the same food shed, or are they slightly different?
Hmm?
Are you in the same food shed? You're 6 hours apart.
6 hours apart.
Yeah, so, although Chicago is so much more urban and has so many, you know, immigrants and different cultures living there that it is different. I mean, I can find anything. True. I mean, and I go to every, that's part of my curiosity isn't just the cooking, but the exploring fun stuff. Yeah. So if I drive by something that says Jamaican market, I pull over. I got to know what's in that Jamaican market.
We did do an ingredient. What ingredient was it?
It was black radishes that I got at the Jamaican
market. And I thought you were going to have to send me some.
Whole Foods again?
I did go to Whole Foods.
Yeah, I'm kind of always amazed. I go look in Whole Foods every once in a while. I'm like, oh my God, they have that.
You should contact Whole Foods and broadcast from their kitchen in Columbus.
They probably do have a kitchen. They do. I'm sure they call it a culinary stadium.
But then you would make all the chefs there angry.
That's probably true. But it would be nicer than my kitchen, which would be kind of fun to work in another.
But that's part of the thing is that you're doing this in your own kitchen tied to your MacBook Air or whatever.
That's exactly what it is.
The Chicago Food Film Festival, did you broadcast a show there?
We didn't. No. We talked about it a little bit, but we didn't quite get that going. Yeah. But
when the Chicago Food Film Festival has like a huge budget, then you could recreate your kitchens on a stage.
We talked
side
about
by
that.
Side.
We talked about
doing a show from it. You know, we talked just a little bit, but actually having people in the audience ask the questions and make it a call-in show, but you know, real live face-to-face call-in show, which could be kind of fun.
Because it could be on one of the ingredients that is being featured in one of the movies.
Yep.
Which I like. So I love the way you can eat what you see on screen.
Yes, I know. It's fun. I'm dying to come to the New York one, so
Ours is before?
Yours is before, a couple of weeks. Ours is
Chicago
usually right around
pretty
Thanksgiving.
Awesome. I want to go to both of them. And then, like you were saying, you wanted there to be a Columbus version?
Well, it's funny because every time I go to something super cool in Chicago or New York or wherever I am, I say to myself, I'm going to bring this to Columbus.
You should.
It becomes my mission. How can I bring this to Columbus? Like, I have talked with Matt Timms. I'm like, you are coming to Columbus.
Well, it'd be on your shoulders to bring all the competitors. I'm sure he would be totally game
if
you promised to bring in like 25 people to make avocado
whatever. Pound cake.
Right. ooh. So we have to take a minute break, yes. Hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with more Chefs Not Allowed on Meet Your Maker.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Washed rind cheeses are a fairly recent addition to the repertoires of artisanal cheesemakers in the United States. These cheeses tend to be stinkier than other types and are often high on the list of connoisseurs. Now, Whole Foods Market has come up with one of their own. The raw cow's milk cheese, made by Sprout Creek Farm in Poughkeepsie, New York, is washed with 6-point ale from Red Hook, Brooklyn. The beige sticky rind deepens in color as it ages. The satiny ivory cheese within is mellow, with a sweetly tangy bite and a grassy aroma. The current version features 6-point diesel, which is in limited supply, so stop by and pick up some before it's gone. And point of origin cheese is sold exclusively at Whole Foods Market in New York, Northern New Jersey, and Connecticut. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Welcome back to Meet Your Maker. I'm your host, Rachel Wharton. Today we are talking to Megan and Trisha, two sisters who co-host Chefs Not Allowed, which is both a blog and a podcast, and they cook together even though they are in different cities in the Midwest. We were actually just before the break, we were talking about the differences between Columbus and Chicago, which you and Trisha, you were saying that you're closer to farm. So that's one thing this is just because I'm interested in this stuff. Thanks. The farm-to-table scene and farmers markets is as big in Columbus as it is everywhere else in the United States.
Yes, on a smaller level, just because the population is smaller. Mm. But, I mean, I can basically get in the car and drive an hour and get to anything I need. Well, not bananas, but that's a whole other story. But, like, you know, we go blueberry picking and apple picking. So awesome. And there's all sorts of farms that do grass-fed beef and chickens and all that stuff. And then, of course, we have our farmers markets all around the city during the summer, spring and
it's probably
going
to be a lot cheaper, too.
It is.
Oh, yeah. Do you ever compare the cost of what your ex cost to her ex?
We don't, because we just know. Right. It's different. We just know that. Although, I have to admit, though, she has this awesome grocery store that I'm jealous of. And sometimes she gets stuff cheaper than I do.
Yeah, in fact, our mom will come visit me in Chicago and go over there and see, like, oh, peaches are so much cheaper. She will go home with bags groceries. Of fruit
that's
to
so
take
funny.
Back to Columbus because it just happens to be cheaper, but... I have this amazing
such a mom
little
thing to do.
grocery store where I find rabbit and horseradish roots and all kinds of. I found a banana flower the other day.
I didn't. Oh, can you chop it up?
I haven't done anything
awesome,
with it yet because I'm scared to death. I don't know what to do with
it. Is it poisonous?
I've had one poisonous. In a dish before once. Have you ever seen bananas in a botanical garden or in the tropics?
Yes. Yeah.
They're like kind of terrifyingly sensual. The way they like they hang that flower hangs down. And it's way over your head. It's
well,
really
I have
crazy.
One of those sensual flowers in my refrigerator right now. just waiting.
How long? I think I had it chopped up. I mean, I feel like I've only had it fresh as a garnish.
Isn't it bitter? It's supposed to be kind
of
bitter.
It was such a small piece of the dish. It was like more about like saying that it had banana flour on. I don't even remember what it tasted like. So it was probably several different components. That's so cool though.
But that is, I mean, and that is part of what's fun about No Chefs. It's like you try some ingredients and you love them and some you hate. Like I hate pink peppercorn.
Right.
I hate it.
That.
In fact, I brought you some.
Oh, awesome.
I brought you some pink peppercorn because you told me that you like it.
Not even on that Columbus pompous grass-fed
look,
beef.
See, I made another cocktail because I hate it so much, and I'm not going to eat
it. I made a cocktail on that one, the pink peppercorn
challenge. That sounds good.
Because actually, again, at the time, that was like our second or third ingredient of the month, and I had little kids, and it was the last day of the month. It was Kellen's birthday.
It was September because my daughter requested ribs.
That would be good with pink peppercorn.
It was. So and pink peppercorn. I made a rub with the pink peppercorn for the ribs, and then I made a coleslaw with pink peppercorn and apples in it, and then I made the most disgusting pink peppercorn ice cream. It was absolutely horrible.
But now you know.
But now you know, and I'm telling all of you out there who are listening, do not make or eat pink peppercorn ice cream.
Yeah, it could have been you and not the recipe.
I think I've had it before.
I'm just saying.
I just tried to eat one. Yeah, and now it wasn't you're going to be coughing.
But the fun thing about how we approach food, how No Chefs Allowed approaches food, is like the reason we still keep doing it is because it works. Like, we're busy career women with kids and that whole thing. But if we focus on one ingredient a month, we found that we would, if we liked it, it became a staple. Like, so we don't have to, like right now we're working with farro. And Megan and I both discovered that we love this ingredient. It will be in our kitchens forever. But like pink peppercorn, we worked with it and decided, I kind of like it, so it's still in the kitchen.
I decided that you can have all my pink peppercorn.
Thank you.
But by taking small chunks in the kitchen and venture with one ingredient, like we could work through it and then add it to our repertoire or not. And so that's why it's been going on for so long, even just between the two of us, regardless of, you know, all the people that follow it. It's because it's easy and manageable and fun because we get to cook together and we're actually learning at a pace that can fit into our lives.
So from that perspective, do you lean towards ingredients that you think you should incorporate into your diet, like quinoa? Are you like, we should really do, does it skew healthy or good
no,
for
but
you?
Now that you mention it, maybe it should.
I was just thinking that, like, maybe I should do this with like all the grains that are sitting in my cupboard that I'm like, I should really be eating that quinoa instead of this awesome pasta made from white pasta.
Yeah. We did do black rice and that made it in.
Oh, right. You were saying you love that.
I love black rice. Sometimes. And we did kale for a whole month. We did papaya, which I hated.
Papaya is a little weird.
I liked it, though.
Babaya papaya was what I said at the end of that month.
How do you pick them? Is it each person gets to choose?
No, we just kind of talk about it and pick one. Like, I'll throw out three or four things, and then she'll say, I only like this one, and we'll do that.
Have you guys ever done my favorite thing, tomatillas? Have you ever done those?
No, but we should because they're in my grocery. I've only purchased them one time, and I made a salad out of it. What kind of salad?
Huh?
Yeah, it was kind of tart. Yeah,
that's really interesting.
I didn't know what they tasted like when I started making it.
They're like gooseberries. The flavor is like a big gooseberry, and it's crunchy like one. So people put gooseberries in salad. This is fun. I got to start joining your challenges because I need to eat more farro and pink peppercorns.
Farro is just beautiful. I feel stupid that I never ate it before.
It may have even been hard to get 10
years
ago.
It is a little hard to get. It's still a little bit hard to get. I mean, of course, Whole Foods has it. But Trader Joe has a new 10-minute farro.
Are you really?
Yes.
How do they do
that?
That's
why we did the show because I saw it in the new ingredients shelf. And I picked it up, and I'm like, okay, I've never done this before.
I
do too.
I saw something there recently. I can't remember what it was. It was like some kind of peanut butter that I really wanted, and I'd never go in there.
Was it the fake Nutella peanut butter?
That might have been what it was.
I think it is.
Because I didn't know till recently that there was Italian Nutella and American Nutella.
Fake.
I love that they use a health claim, like it's good for you, just because it has nuts. Yeah, but
right.
Ooh, so farro is the ingredient right now.
Yeah.
How many dishes have you both made?
I've made two plus just having it like a side dish of rice. But I've been wanting to make this cheesy farro dish. So it's kind of like this comfort food cheesy concoction. And I've been wanting to make it for like 6 months. So when it came up, I'm like, yeah, that one. Because it also catapults you into trying the things that you feel like you don't have time for. So
because you have to, because your readers are reading.
But she's going to do, I thought you were going to do coconut milk in it. You were going to.
Yeah, like a coconut farro kale type stew type thing.
Like kind of Caribbean?
Yeah. And I have to get it in by the end of the month because March will bring a new ingredient. So
do you know what it is? You're not allowed to say, right?
People, top secret. It's like the Oscars. It's in a sealed envelope only to be brought out on March 1st.
Do people suggest things? your readers don't suggest things? Like, please
no,
do.
Not really. No. Huh.
And no one's ever been like, if you do blank, I'll give you a lifetime supply.
Wouldn't that be great?
Really?
No. Oh my God.
I'm waiting for that to happen after this show.
The rabbit farmer. I mean, I guess
the rabbit farmer. Yeah.
Is that the only protein?
No, I've been wanting to do lamb just because I've made a lamb roast before and it was like one of the best things I ever made, and then I've never made it again. Like,
I've always wanted to make a lamb roast, actually.
Yeah. Oh, it was really good. It had cinnamon and garlic cloves all smashed in it, rosemary. It was really good. See, I can talk about it. It was like Easter 5 years ago, and
you
I
still remember.
So it's like, what's stopping me?
So you guys pretty much recreate comfort food out of these things, right?
Not all the time. It doesn't have to be comfort food.
Do you
but
do anything? Like, do you do any like ethnic dishes ever, or you know, spices?
Sure, we did a whole show on curry, and mm-hmm. we did some stuff there. We had a guy from the Spice House, which is a pretty big spice.
Oh yeah, know, that's online, that's a coup.
And, yeah, so the yeah. guy who started the Spice House was on our show. And
that's awesome.
He was fabulous. Through,
he was fabulous. He's really fun.
And he just calls in.
Yeah, he just right. calls in. Yeah,
and so we, I made
you made
my own
your
curry
own.
Mix. So you know, we toasted all the.
Damn, that's
the spices
cool.
together and mixed it all up or whatever, and then I gave it away as gifts. I mean, it was a really great project to like. Now when I go to hostess, like I give to the hostess just my own personal curry. But now I'm empowered because Tom Erd, the spice nerd from the Spice House, you know, took a minute to teach us a little something, something.
Right, so. And well, the way that people like the Indians and the way they toast their spices before they
yeah,
cook is really interesting to learn. It's like. Creates totally different flavors.
Oh, well, definitely. And it is, it's kind of fun when you're doing a radio show because, what was it, the cardamom that I'm reading in this recipe, and it says, when you put this on the heat, stand back because it might explode. And I was like, okay, everybody,
the
here
pods?
We go. Yeah.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
But then you have this expert going, it's going to be okay.
Yeah, like, don't worry. It will not hurt you.
Like, partway through the show with me, he's like, are those still on there? I think it's time to take them off. I'm like, you can't even
heard that?
Smell them.
That's amazing. That is so cool.
So
that's radio at its best.
Yeah, it was fun.
It is. It's pretty fun.
And you hear all the sounds of our kitchens. I mean, we've kind of learned that there are some points in the show you really shouldn't turn on the food processor. You gotta kind of work through
the blender.
It because of the blender. Yeah.
Wait, so did you just use it until help people hang in there?
Well, we talk over it, or you know, you wait till the break if you got something really loud to do, but
sometimes you have to use it for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just have to wait till the break for something like that. But I do remember we did a show on rhubarb, and actually at the beginning of the show, Megan had said, you know, you can make rhubarb tea. So we made rhubarb tea to start the show. And then we keep going, and Megan's like, okay, how's your dish coming? I'm like, oh my gosh, I haven't stood up. I'm still drinking my rhubarb tea. Like, I didn't go any further than just
good?
Drinking the tea.
It's so good.
It was
good.
Yeah.
All you do, I mean, it is rhubarb and hot water.
It tastes. It's kind of lemony.
No, it's not nearly as tart as you would think a raw rhubarb would be. It's fruity.
I have to try.
I put a little honey in mine, but it's very relaxing. So if you need to get something done, if you're on a radio show and you're supposed to be cooking, don't have rhubarb tea because you won't finish. I'm just
saying. What else did you do with the rhubarb?
Anything savory? I pickled it. Oh, I pickled it, and it was really good. And I served it. I ended up. I mean, most of what we do on the show is we try and make something that we can serve our families for dinner.
Oh, right.
You know, so it would be like 4 or 5 in the afternoon, we'd do the show, and then you'd have dinner. But this one I did, I was going to a party that night, so I took the pickled rhubarb and some goat cheese and crackers, and it was great.
That sounds good.
I sautéed it. I wanted to see if I could do something savory because I've only had it as a dessert. So I did an upside-down rhubarb cake, like an upside-down pineapple upside-down cake. But then also I did just sautéed, and I had some greens in there with poached eggs.
That sounds pretty. Did that work?
I ate it.
Right.
our kids are not happy
on Wednesdays.
I feel
like you could add it to lamb. Like you could cook
probably.
It with meat.
Probably. Yeah. I bet you could.
Yeah.
But if you go onto the Google, as Megan said.
The Google. I like that.
And look for savory rhubarb dishes. Like that's where I was like, I can't find anything. And I mean, I only found a couple dishes, and so we just kind of went with it because I was curious, but I haven't done it since, so I don't know. But I haven't done the lamb since either, and that was actually good.
Well, I mean, that's what I love about, I mean, the challenge is awesome because it's, I mean, like, I write about food for a living, but then I'm still like, oh man, I really want to make a pizza. I never do that. Why? Yeah. And like, I should be, of all people, like, I should
See, we did pizza. Right. We had a guy on teaching us how to do pizza crust.
You need, like, also, that's why it's good. It was basically essentially what you're doing is like, I'm going to invite a bunch of people over. I'm going to tell them I'll make pizza, and then you have to do it. So it's like, you've set your, it's, so I mean, it's amazing.
Well, especially when you have that end of the month dinner party, you know, where you're going to, you know, our rule was that you had to do one, you had to use the ingredient in your main dish and then one other thing. So it could be an appetizer, it could be a cocktail or whatever.
Or dessert.
But that really, or dessert. So that really gets you going. You've got to have something presentable.
And your guests or your families are in theory supposed to vote. They're supposed to vote based on what it sounds like.
But they drink a lot of wine. And no one's going to tell you your food stinks after you just fed them and gave them wine. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think I've actually gotten a score. People are just like, oh, no, it was great. Like, I guess if I would have handed them a real ballot. But I never do.
That kind of ruins the party. Yeah.
Where it was anonymous. Or then they also, like you said, they didn't actually taste the rhubarb kale egg dish, right?
Right, no,
right. That nobody's that bad for that one.
Yeah. Kale is kind of lemony. I can see it.
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I like bitter food though, which is always my family's demise. But so stuff
you
like that.
You serve them Fernet.
I'll eat it for sport too. If I made it, I'll eat it for sport. Like, oh, it's got nutrients in it. You know, my next meal will be better. But yeah, my family did not. But there was a time where the show aired every Wednesday night, and my family would come home after the show, and we would have these huge, elaborate dinners, and we would just joke around that Wednesday was the new Sunday because it would be like the best meal of the day or the week. Yeah.
All right, we are almost out of time. So if people are listening, obviously you go to Chefs Not Allowed.
No chefs allowed.
Okay, so if there's one episode that people should like, what's the most hilarious or the thing that sums up what you do? What's the one that people should go to first?
Huh, the most hilarious. Well, my mind is going to the spice one, but I'm not sure that was funny. It was just really informative and eye-opening.
The aphrodisiac show was funny.
That was recently Valentine's Day?
It was actually a year ago Valentine's Day, but we picked every aphrodisiac food we could think of and we tried to cook
them. Oh, you shucked an oyster.
We shucked an oyster.
Yeah, that was my first one.
She taught you how to do it
on the show.
On the radio. That my arm was sore the next day.
Did you use a screwdriver? That's how I tried to open my first oyster. Oh.
She got herself a shucking knife.
I can't imagine. I feel like you might as well be doing it with blindfold too, if someone's not actually showing you.
Right. She was talking me through.
Maybe it's easier.
I couldn't get it to open either, and so we went to break, and I put it aside or whatever. And then when I went to go pick it back up, I thought I had made some progress, and I went to go pick it back up, and then it was like I didn't make progress, and was I was like, closed. Oh my gosh, it closed back up. Yeah. And then I figured out that I had picked up the wrong one. So then once I figured that out, once it popped, it was like, I mean, I was a champion. I had my hands in the air, but I was all by myself. That's the funny thing about on the radio, too. It's like I get all excited. I'm like, yeah, hands in the air. And I'm like, I'm here by myself.
Which seems like an apt way. My hands are in the air. It's an apt way to end Meet Your Maker. Thank you guys so much for coming on the show, coming to New York City.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.